In case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Navigating the law can be tough, but we're tougher. Let us handle the fight. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
On your lawn. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday. Hopefully everybody having a great end to the week. I know that some of you are already making your way to the college football destinations for the weekend. Like, shout out my buddy Tyler Huck, part of the College Football Uncensored podcast, as I know that he's heading down to Tallahassee to go see his 3-0 Florida State Seminoles. So, T. Huck, you're the man. Safe travels down there. But I know that there's a lot of people heading down. As, you know, Florida with a night game tomorrow night against Boston College. And the Noles trying to move to 4-0 on the season. I know a little banged up last week. It does look like, though, that Jordan Travis will have a good chance to go. But at the same time, though, I mean, Travis has played pretty well this year. It would be kind of hard to go away from what Tate Rodemaker did in that second half in that win against Louisville. So that is something to keep an eye on this weekend. The night slate this week, I think, is going to be a really good one, as we're going to get A&M and Arkansas, as we talked yesterday with John Neighbors about Arkansas. We'll try to get an A&M guest tomorrow and talk some Aggies there. But still to come here on this one, the 3:30 game this week on CBS is going to be Florida at Tennessee. We're going to talk the Florida side of things with Andrew Spivey of GatorCountry.com. That is coming up next. And then bottom half of this hour, going to get a chance to catch up with Jake Crane, part of Crane & Company, streaming daily as part of the Daily Wire. That comes out streamed every single morning at 7:30 right there with he, his brother Blaine, and also, too, with David Cohn, the former Michigan quarterback, Savannah guy, Southern guy, who we loaned to the state of Michigan for some time. But we got him back. We got him back down here. So we'll talk with Jake. Find him on Twitter at Jake Crane _. I know that we just talked with Mickey Joseph, who, of course, is going to probably put his name in the hat to be the next head coach at Nebraska. But, of course, there is already news out there of Nebraska's supposed interest in numerous coaches. I mean, I have seen Bill O'Brien mentioned. I have also seen Matt Campbell at Iowa State mentioned. And Lance Leipold is another coach that has been mentioned, as he is off to a 3-0 start. Are we aware of this? That Kansas is off to a 3-0 start? I mean, a couple of weeks ago, they go on the road and beat West Virginia at West Virginia. And then this past weekend, a team that a lot of people thought was going to be crashing college football playoff party this year, the second straight one from the American Athletic Conference, the Houston Cougars, and they go to TDECU Field there in Houston and take it to Houston in that win. 48-30, I believe, was the final in that one. But Leipold asked on Tuesday about other college football jobs that have already become open. And the 58-year-old really not offering any real indication that he would be looking to go somewhere else. Quote, just like anything, I have to stay in the moment where your feet are at. Kelly and I, that being his wife, we came to Lawrence, Kansas, not to move at this stage of our career. It's flattering. Like you said, it's early in the season, but our focus is to build the Kansas Jayhawks into a winner. And a consistent winner for the long haul. I don't know if that means that he's going to stay at Kansas. Of course, you know, that's kind of the dangerous thing whenever, you know, openings are out there and a coach is asked about said opening, is that you don't want to necessarily put yourself in a situation where then afterwards it's a, hey, he said he'd never leave. Like, you know, the one thing, and Nick Saban, if I'm not mistaken, has repeatedly talked about, yeah, I wish I did not say that when I was the coach of the Miami Dolphins. Remember, it was the famous, I'm not going to be the coach at Alabama. I don't know how many times you're going to ask it. And then 2 days later, he was named the head coach at Alabama. And he has said, yeah, I probably should have handled that differently. I mean, I think that it's a situation where it's really a no-win at times where you're asked about a current open job and you comment on that open job. And then some people might say, oh, well, you know, you said you wanted to stay here at this school and you left. You know, you're no good for your word. Well, I think in the case of Leopold, I think that he's on to something right there, because at Kansas, there is no expectation of the program. You can build the expectation of the program. Remember, I've been talking about Mark Stoops at Kentucky, and in this offseason, there was the whole thing with Stoops and John Calipari. Calipari, we are a basketball school, which, let's be honest here, no matter how much football does, it's still kind of like in New York City, that if the Knicks are ever really that good, then the Knicks will immediately become the topic of conversation there in New York. In Chicago, if the Cubs are ever good, then the Cubs become the topic of conversation in Chicago. There are certain teams in certain programs at certain schools, but certain teams in professional markets that if they have any hint of success will always overtake the success of any other organization in their city, no matter how much those teams win. And, you know, let's just take Atlanta, for example. If the Braves are ever really good, then the Braves are always going to be the topic of conversation. Just like if Georgia Tech is really good, but Georgia is still a somewhat good program and still worthy of being in the headlines, then the media attention is still going to be on Athens and not Midtown Atlanta. It just happens that way. And in this case right here, no matter really what Lance Leopold does, because they will lose a few games this season, that's going to happen. It's just there's better teams in their conference, and that's going to happen. But no matter what they do this season, if they make a bowl game, that's good enough there at Kansas. If they win 7 or 8 games, that's even better at Kansas. That's a hell of a football season there for that program. If they are even able to reach the levels that Mark Mangino took this program when they were able to be making BCS bowl games, then that's another thing as well that can be huge. So sometimes the move is to not even make a move at all. And I think if you're Leopold, I think at this stage in his career, he probably needs to look at the situation that he's in as opposed to the situation that he would be in. And I think that this job is hard enough. Why make it even harder? Because at this case right here, I don't know when his birthday is, but let's just say 59 years old, if he did indeed accept a job at Nebraska and take that over, I think that you're having to completely rebuild the program. That takes a lot of energy. You're having to rebuild the culture of not only inside the building, but also the culture that you want to portray to outside the building in recruiting and getting guys to say yes to your school through the transfer portal. That's even more energy. Hiring more coaches, hiring more staff, doing all of this different types of stuff that I think if you're Leopold and you have a hint of success, Lawrence, Kansas is the place for you right now. And I think that probably is a good spot for him to stay in, because if he is just there for, say, 7, 8 more years, if in his mid-60s he says, hey, guys, you know what? That's enough. I've had a good career. It's time for me to move on. So-and-so is going to be taking over the program, or even leave it up to Kansas to decide if indeed they want to move on with their program, then he can do that and be able to, I think, feel pretty good about his decision to do as much. So, you know, I think that that's something that will be interesting to keep an eye on with him. And if I'm Nebraska too as well, I mean, this is going to be an ageist thing, and I apologize for that, but I think I'm looking for not necessarily, you know, because I think they felt like they had a home run in Scott Frost, and it was something that was going to meet the criteria that I just talked about. A young guy who has had some success, which probably that would lead you more towards Matt Campbell than towards Bill O'Brien or Lance Leopold. Although, I mean, I think with Bill O'Brien, in terms of the headlines of the hire, I don't think that it would necessarily be one that you look at and say, oh, man, you know, that's a home run hire. That is going to be one that moves the program forward. And also, too, I mean, a man we just talked with, Mickey Joseph, somebody that if he is able to show you that he can move this program forward, you know, for the rest of this season, I think at least you give him a shot. And I think that that's somebody else that you could look to. But in terms of somebody that has been coaching for some time, and also too, I mean, I think that you're also starting to see coaches be more wise to this. That's why, for example, a guy like Matt Campbell, why you've seen him mentioned for numerous jobs out there, and he's never necessarily jumped at the opportunity, is because I think he says, I like having the success that we have right here. We're doing some really good things here. Why necessarily start that process all over again and go to a place where now we're seeing probably within 2 or 3 years, if you're not showing drastic improvement, then you're going to be shown the door. And once you're shown the door, there's no guarantee that you walk back through it as a head coach. I mean, then you have to restart all of that all over again in terms of maybe you got to go be a position coach in the NFL or with another program. Maybe you get a shot as an offensive or a defensive coordinator with a team. Maybe that's a possibility. But in terms of Leipold, I mean, him saying that, I think if you're a Kansas fan, you have to take some comfort in those words. And the other thing as well, like I said, I just don't necessarily see the huge upside of him taking the other job of, because along with doing all those things that I just mentioned, Ohio State's got a huge start on you. Michigan has a huge start on you. And Penn State has a huge start on you. Wisconsin, all of these schools that I'm mentioning right now have been able to have quite a few steps in front of you in terms of being able to be a competitive program, and you're trying to be able to build back up and compete with said programs. So sometimes, like I said, the move not made is the best move to make. You know, it's like in poker. I mean, you know, I bring up that same example, is fold the hand you know you can't win, and also to check until you feel like, all right, now it's time to raise the stakes a little bit, and then I can go from there. Those are decisions that professionally, I think we all have to make, but especially coaches have to make those decisions as well. All right, coming up next, the Gators are looking for another statement this weekend. And if they have that in them, that's another story. We'll talk about that and the trip up to Knoxville with Andrew Spivey of GatorCountry.com. He joins us next right here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Dan Matthews in for Chuck.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
The Florida Gators taking the road this weekend to take on the Tennessee Volunteers. The Gators 2-1 on the season. Boy, they had to pull one out of the hat on Saturday against USF. And to talk that and much more is Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com, at Andrew Spivey GC. Also, too, he doesn't hide his allegiance in terms of who he roots for on the professional baseball fields. The Braves, Spivey, I mean, probably down there in Florida, you got to deal with some Mets fans down there. I mean, probably even too with Pete Alonso and Daniel Vogelbach and their connections to Florida. So has that been an issue for you at times this season?
Everybody loves Pete Alonso. Hey, I love Pete Alonso, except for when he plays the Braves, and except for when he hits grand slams that keeps our Braves behind. But it doesn't matter. You know, my allegiance to Atlanta will always be there. I'm Brave throughout, and it doesn't matter who plays for the Mets. Tim Tebow, when he plays for the Mets, I would root against him. It's always Braves.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about the team that you cover on a daily basis. That's the Florida Gators. And Anthony Richardson has been a real topic of conversation after the last couple of weeks' games. Are you still confident? Are Florida fans still confident that Anthony Richardson is the guy?
The confidence is wavering, for sure, just because of the uncertainty around him. And, you know, my saying to that is this, and that is, what, there's something going on with Anthony Richardson. You know, I know that Billy Napier has kind of said a little bit that the depth behind him has been a reason of why Richardson's not running the ball as much. And, you know, so the confidence for me is still there that I think Richardson can be the guy. He has to be able to run the football. If Anthony Richardson's not running the football, you're basically asking him to play with his hands tied behind his back, and that's just not fair for a quarterback. He's got to be able to run the ball in order for defenses to come up, and in order for him to be able to get out in the rollout game, the play action, the bootleg game, and for that to work, the teams have to respect that he's going to run the ball. In the last 2 weeks, teams just haven't respected that he's going to run the football. If Florida has a chance in this Tennessee game at all, it has to be because Anthony Richardson's running the ball and that Tennessee's afraid that he's going to run the football.
And, I mean, you kind of just led into my next question. I mean, what do you feel like Richardson has to do in order to be successful?
be himself, you know, be Anthony Richardson. You know, I said this a little bit in our preview on our roundtable, but Anthony Richardson has to be Anthony Richardson this week. And that's the fun-loving guy who, you know, does the backflips and, you know, has fun and everything else. He hasn't been that guy since the Utah game. And he has to be that guy. He has to be able to run the ball, and he has to be able to get out outside the pocket and be a dual-threat guy that – teams have to respect him. And, you know, you go back to the USF game, you go back to the Kentucky game. When he was rolling out, teams were not respecting him to run the ball. They were just covering up the receivers and the tight ends on the bootleg and the play action game and not respecting that he's going to run the ball because he wasn't running the ball. He has to be able to run the football. He has to be able to make Tennessee think twice, put a spy on him, and basically play 10-on-10 in the defense, or Florida's going to get blown out in this football game.
Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com, at Andrew Spivey GC is how you find him on Twitter. He joins us right here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Dan Matthews in for Chuck. Jack Miller, seen his name thrown out on Twitter a few times over the last couple of days. What's his status, and when do you think maybe that glass is broken, that he at least gets to get some playing time, or maybe even full-on gets the job? Do you think that's a possibility?
I think it's hard to say he's going to get the job. Just from what we heard, he was, you know, a pretty good distance behind Richardson. And it still looks like he's about a week away from getting back on the field with that broken thumb. You know, he's probably next week against Eastern Washington. I would expect him to get back and on the practice field. Now, whether that, you know, means he's ready and in game shape to play next Saturday, we'll see. Obviously having him back will help a little bit, simply for the reason that he has proven that he can play an SEC football game. So if Anthony Richardson does get injured or has his helmet knocked off or whatever, you have a proven backup. Right now, Florida's playing with a walk-on in Adam Engel, and then a redshirt freshman in Jay Lekitna, and a freshman in Max Brown behind Anthony Richardson. None of those three guys are ready to play in the SEC. Jack Miller's at least ready to go. So if he's able next week to get back on the practice field and get back in game shape, I think it helps Anthony a lot. And, you know, I think the biggest thing for Jack is getting him ready for the future. If Richardson, you know, goes and leaves after this year, then it's Jack's team next year. And that's the biggest thing, is getting him ready.
Now, this receiving game, you know, at least, Andrew, I've seen catches, I've seen yards, I've seen all those different things. The stats will even show you they haven't gotten to the end zone just yet. Can the passing game do that this week and really get that part of this offense going against Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, Dan, I'd love to say yeah, but these receivers haven't shown, even against USF, that they can get separation. You know, while Anthony gets the bulk of the criticism and the talk about the passing game not, you know, performing, the receivers haven't gotten open. You know, you look at the big play last week to Justin Shorter, he should have blown by the USF defender, but instead it was right there neck to neck with Justin, and he had to go make a great catch to make the play there. So, you know, that was a question mark heading into the season, was could they get separation at the receiver position? They were hoping Ricky Purcell would be that guy to really get separation. He hasn't, and that's been a struggle. And Florida's got to figure out a way against Tennessee to get some separation. And, you know, I don't know that there's a lot of confidence there. I mean, you know, when you can't do that against USF, how do you think you're going to do that against a Tennessee team that's much better than USF? I think they got to get creative in a little bit. And, again, having Anthony be able to run the ball should loosen that up a little bit. And you hope that allows the receivers just to get a step. I mean, that right now they're not even getting a step on guys. And you hope, you know, with the tight end play as well, that they can just figure out a way to get a little bit of separation is better than none.
How important has Trey Dean been for this defense?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with Ventrell gone, he's kind of been that, you know, unspoken leader. You know, I say this again, if Trey Dean's 10 yards from the ball, 5 yards from the ball, That's where he does his damage. Don't ask him to go out and be a cover safety. That's not him. He's a headhunter, and he's done really well this year. Now, obviously, he's still a little bit of a question mark in the passing game, but that's always going to be his kind of criticism there. And, you know, last week against USF with Ventrell out, Trey had a really big game of stopping the running game there and also getting the defense lined up. And, you know, again, he gets a lot of criticism, and a lot of it's warranted. But without Trey Dean, this defense would be in a lot of trouble from a leadership standpoint, but also in a run-stopping standpoint.
How about the former Bulldog, Brenton Cox?
The most inconsistent up-and-down player in the country, in my opinion. A guy that just one play, he looks great. The next five, he looks like a guy who has never played before. You know, you go back to last week. For the majority of the game, he was non-existent. And then the last drive of the game, when Florida really needed him, he stepped up and was getting tons of pressure, ended up getting a half a sack credit to him, had a pass break up there. It just is, it's about consistency with Brenton Cox, and I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it makes him so inconsistent. He's got to figure that out. Florida needs Brenton Cox to be a pass rush disruptive guy, especially against Hayden Hooker this week. And, you know, Tennessee has been a little acceptable to the pass rush. They need him to be that guy there. And, you know, furthermore, they need him to set the edge. That's been a big problem for Florida is, you know, teams have been able to reverse things against this team. They've been able to run the option against this team and run the toss against this team because they haven't set the edge. Brenton Cox has got to do that, and he's just got to be consistent in his pass rush of being a play-after-play guy instead of a play here, a play there, and kind of taking a few plays off in between.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the talent is definitely there. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's just about putting it all together, as you just pointed out, Andrew. Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com. Find him on Twitter. Give him a follow, please. Andrew Spivey, GC, is how you find him. Andrew, appreciate the time as always, buddy. Great catching up with you. And, you know, the postseason coming up, I'm assuming I'll probably see you up here pretty soon.
You will absolutely see me as we'll be division champs, hopefully.
All right, there you go. For Braves fans, speaking it into existence. Andrew Spivey, appreciate it, buddy. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of – I'd say there's a lot more questions on the on the Florida side than there is with Tennessee in terms of, you know, what you think they can do in order to win this game. Kind of like what we talked about with the Alabama-Texas game a couple of weeks ago. It was probably going to be more of what – Alabama didn't do as opposed to what Texas did. I think you could possibly see the same thing.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
All right, let's get right to it because this man is very busy. He's always really busy, and he is part of Crane and Company on the Daily Wire. You can watch it. You can hear it. You can do all of those different things on a daily basis. And also, too, works with a great guy in David Cohn, works with his brother in Blaine Crane. I think there is a height requirement, too, to be part of the show. 6'2 or taller to be part of Crane and Company. Jake Crane joining us right now. Jake, is that accurate? Is there a height requirement to be part of the three-man crew?
Yeah, man. I mean, we're taller than some WNBA teams. It's like a roller coaster. You got to be a certain height to be able to ride. But, I mean, Cone is an absolute tree. I mean, he's every bit of 6'7". I mean, his hands are the size of a first baseman's mitt. So, yeah, you got to be pretty up there.
Yeah, you definitely do. And, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that I just didn't pass the requirement. I mean, you know, that happens.
Well, listen, there's exceptions. Okay. Look, you have the DH rule in both leagues now in Major League Baseball. So who's to say, you know, are there any rules anymore?
That's true. I mean, I always preferred hitting over fielding anyways. So it works out well. It's a perfect fit. We'll talk later. You're a believer in the Vols, huh? Tell us why.
Well, you know, I think they have more depth on defense, but it seems to me when I watch them play, because usually, and I'm kind of in the age group where, you know, I haven't seen Tennessee at their peak outside of 2004, you know, when they played Auburn in the SEC championship. We know Auburn won that game. But it seems to me now when I watch Tennessee play and I look at them on the sidelines when it's not going good, there is no more panic, which tells me you're not hoping to win, you're expecting to win. Now, I do think Heupel, it's amazing. The longer you stay in the SEC, the slower the offense gets. Just ask Gus Malzahn or Mike Leach or anybody like that. I think Heupel's doing a good job of going really fast in spots, but it's not to the point where the defense is on the field for 120 plays. Because when you run that style of offense, you may score 21 points in the first half, but the offense is three and out, five-play touchdown drive, three and out, four-play touchdown drive. Well, that's great. But the offense has been on the field for less than 20 snaps, and the defense has been on the field the whole time. So I think he's kind of bridged that gap. But look, it comes down to personnel, and it comes down to personnel up front. And I think they have the depth up front, and the way the East is going to shake out with the schedule, having Florida at home, having Kentucky at home, where Tennessee is going to be able to put together a really quality year.
And, I mean, you know, this is a weekend, too, where you've got this game, Tennessee and Florida. You got A&M and Arkansas in Arlington. I mean, there's some potential upset possibilities out there. Who do you think probably needs to be the most worried heading into their matchup this weekend?
You know, Arkansas secondary, it's very troubling right now, especially with Catalan being out for the year. Max Johnson's at A&M now, a guy who doesn't panic in the pocket. I think this is going to be a game that's a lot more high scoring than people think. If Arkansas is able to keep KJ Jefferson upright and not absolutely beat up by the third quarter, because that offense revolves around him and the run game, and Rocket Sanders is able to reel off some big wins, and the Knox kid at tight end, I really like for Arkansas. I think he can be a game changer in the red zone. But yeah, man, A&M, if I'm an Arkansas fan, I know this game's in Arlington. It's a neutral site, whatever you want to call it. But this one kind of would worry me a little bit. You know, outside of the SEC, too, you know, Baylor going to Iowa State. Ames is not an easy place to play as well. But I would go Arkansas. I'd be worried about A&M right now.
Part of Crane and Company daily on the Daily Wire. He is Jake Crane. Find him on Twitter at Jake Crane _ is how you can find him. He's, you know, not going to be tested on Saturday, but Stetson Bennett looked pretty good throughout the first three games. It seems like everybody is singing his praises. He for real?
Yeah, look, I would rather, at least to this point in the season, I would rather play last year's Georgia team than this year's Georgia team. I mean, Stetson Bennett, what do you got to lose? You're already a hero. You were the quarterback that won the Natty in Georgia after 40 years of wandering in the desert looking for one. So you're playing loose. You're playing with nothing to lose. And I think they're a more balanced team this year. The defense isn't as elite as it was last year, but it's still really, really good. It's a top three defense in the country. But the offense is explosive. Todd Monken is spreading things out. They're unpredictable on first down. And this Georgia team can beat you in multiple ways. The Georgia team last year had a couple avenues to be able to beat you. Don't screw it up on offense or special teams. Play great defense and let gravity take effect over four quarters. This team can beat you offensively in a shootout. They can lock you down for four quarters. They can make big plays on special teams. And offensively, they've really opened it up more. That tight end room is unbelievable. But this is the style of offense I thought we were going to see last year from Georgia. But JT Daniels gets hurt. The wide receiver room is basically in a triage tent with all the injuries. And you are unbelievably elite on defense. So they made the decision to play it close to the vest. So, yeah, Stetson's for real. He's a dangerous man. I knew when he got that fade haircut, it was about to get really weird.
I mean, you know, a couple of things you said right there, too. I mean, him playing loose, him playing free. I mean, you're exactly right. It's one of those, hey, you know, I'm not even really supposed to be in this position anyway. I kind of, you know, and let's continue on that, Jake.
Don't you kind of feel like that's been the mystique of Stetson Bennett, that why he has worked is because he kind of looks at it and says, all right, nobody really likes me. Fine. Screw all you guys. I'll go out there and play for myself and play for my guys.
Yeah, it's a little bit Baker Mayfield-ish, you know, and I say when you kind of look at the way he attacks things. But, yeah, you know, again, I think it's funny. I was watching Stetson during an interview, and he said, you know, I got told that I couldn't do so many things that I just started going out there and being like, yeah, I can do it, and I'm going to do it. Because if I fail, well, it's just going to be what y'all thought. Y'all didn't expect anything out of me, so why would I not go out here and ball? And that is the most dangerous type of person to play against, a person with a chip on their shoulder, with nothing to lose, that nobody believes in, that's surrounded by an army of aliens like they are at Georgia, where you just got to get them the ball, and that's what Stetson's doing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's something that Georgia fans have been excited to see in the early part of the season. That is for sure. Let's continue with Jake Crane, part of Crane & Company. Heard daily on the Daily Wire, and also, too, you can find him on Twitter at @JakeCrane_. Aggie fans, you talked about Texas A&M and Arkansas just a second ago. That was a tough one a couple of weeks ago against Appalachian State. Last week, I think, probably helped with the win at home, Max Johnson at quarterback. Do you kind of sense, though, that Aggie fan might be starting to get a little restless with Jimbo when you factor in $9.5 million per year and, you know, it's year five, so wouldn't you think that fans are kind of like, hey, where's the results? Where's Atlanta? Where's all these things?
Yeah, look, I mean, if you look at the way the roster's built and kind of what he inherited and how he took it over, next year is really kind of the crescendo that it's been building to. But, yeah, when you pay a guy that much money, because what's the only box that hasn't been checked for A&M? You've had the hype. You've had the number one recruiting class. You've got the stadium. You've got the resources. You've got the big-name coach. The last thing they've got to do is win the West, something they haven't been able to do. So I can understand being restless. I can understand being impatient. But I think it's one more year of having – and I know A&M fans keep hearing it. One more year. One more year. Well, you've waited since 1939, so what's one more year? But, yeah, I get it. The offenses look stagnant. There's been a lack of explosive plays. I mean, App State came in and pushed you around. So, yeah, I can feel their pain, but I think they're going to get to the Valley of Happiness here soon.
Getting to the end here with Jake Crane, part of the Crane & Company. Yeah, you can find him on Twitter at @JakeCrane_. Let's talk back still in the SEC West, and that's Auburn. A tough one over the weekend. The calls for Brian Harsin seem to be getting louder and louder. Can they be saved this season, or is this a dead man walking scenario?
Yeah, unless they know magic or he finds an infinity stone, there's nothing you can do. The personnel is as bad as I've ever seen. And look, is he in year two? Yes. But two things can be true at once. You did nothing in the portal. You knew how bad this roster was. You knew how bad the offensive line was. But you actually lost people. I mean, Nick Broms retired before who was probably one of your best offensive linemen, retired before the season. So you don't get anybody at the offensive line in the transfer portal. You go get Zach Calzada out of the portal at quarterback, who when you look at the guy, I mean, there were so many good quarterbacks in the transfer portal. The fact that Auburn couldn't get one speaks more about the lack of Brian Harsin's and his staff's ability to recruit. Players win games while coaches watch and talk. Brian Harsin can't get the players in there. But what I was most disgusted about was they got out-efforted against Penn State. Mm-hmm. They got out-physicaled. They got out-toughed, out-manned, out-coached. And if you watch Brian Harsin, he gets beat every halftime in adjustments. The reason they fell off a cliff last year, he can't adjust after halftime. And sometimes the game plan, after you get off script, you got to be able to be smart enough to know what you're looking at. I don't know if Brian Harsin really knows what he's looking at or how to adjust. It was a mistake to bring him in. Auburn's falling farther behind the eight ball when you look at what Alabama and Georgia's doing. So he's a dead man walking, man. If they lose to Missouri, I don't think he makes it to the post-game press conference.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, yeah, it's never a good place to be of a team getting out-coached and outworked and all of the different things that you threw out there. I threw out physicaled once at a game, and people looked at me like I was crazy. I said, come on, I'm talking football here. Try to keep up. Just a couple more for you, Jake. You know, you mentioned Alabama there, and a couple of weeks ago, I mean, it seems like The script of an Alabama season plays out this way every single year. They have a game like they had a couple of weeks ago. They win, and Saban gets asked about, oh, man, you only beat them by 1 point. I mean, you know, all these different types of things. And some people start to wonder, oh, well, are we starting to see some shaky wheels there in Tuscaloosa? Then they go out there and they house someone. I mean, do you see any major concerns with this Alabama team, or do you think that it was a really tough win at a tough place to play in Austin, and they got out of there beating a much improved team?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not a believer in a ugly win or a pretty loss. You either lose or you win. When you set the standard like Alabama has, and you've been so dominant and so good for so long, and the expectations are so high, anything short of perfection is going to be judged in a certain light. I look at it like this. Alabama, without Tyler Harrell, who's their vertical threat, JoJo Earl, who's one of their most experienced wide receivers, which is huge because they have talent. They're just young. Kobe Prince is a good player. Bond's a good player. Leary's a good player. They have talent. Defensively, I was more surprised they couldn't get a pass rush. I think Texas offensive line played the game of their life, to be honest with you, with three young guys there. But Alabama played one of the worst games in the Nick Saban era. They were the most penalized they've ever been under Saban before the fourth quarter started. And they still went on the road and beat a Texas team that this was their Super Bowl with a former Saban assistant that has a good idea of what they're doing on defense. That, to me, should scare everybody more than, oh, Alabama's going to struggle this year. It's not the same old Alabama. I'm going to tell you this. Alabama's really, really, really good. And the fact they survived that game and now Nick Saban can go back in those meeting rooms and say, look, told you. You don't want to listen. You don't want to do it this way. We're not invincible. We'll see Alabama probably go through the regular season undefeated. That game at Tennessee is going to be interesting. And they're going to run into Georgia in the SEC championship game. But everybody that's jumping off this Alabama bandwagon and think they're not very good, I got some news for you. They're still pretty good, and they're probably still going to be in the Natty.
One final one for you. I know you got to run, Jake. And that is, what program nationally do you think more people need to be talking about?
Washington. I mean, they're a team I picked to go 7-2 in the Pac-12. Michael Penix Jr. looks like the Michael Penix Jr. from 2 years ago in Indiana. They're flying around on defense, hitting people. Polk and McMillan at wide receiver are really nice. I would say them. And I tell you what, man, Brent Venables in Oklahoma look pretty good. They look like they've changed their identity a little bit. They're a lot more physical on defense, as is Texas. So I would say Washington and Oklahoma, especially Oklahoma, maybe being able to go undefeated. You get Kansas State at home. You get Baylor at home. You get Oklahoma State at home. We could see a 12-0 Oklahoma.
Interesting enough. Jake Crane, part of the Crane & Company. You can stream them daily, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Eastern and 6:30 Central as part of the Daily Wire. Find him on Twitter at @JakeCrane_. Jake, appreciate it as always, buddy. Let's catch up again here very soon.
Hey, always enjoy coming on, man. Really love your work. Let's chop it up again.
For sure. Jake Crane, you're the man, buddy.
See you, brother.
He is the man. I'm a huge, huge fan of that guy, David Cohn, his brother Blaine. I had a chance to meet Blaine for the first time at SEC Media Days this year. So a great crew over there at Crane and Company. All right, coming up next, the man made himself a legend, yet it happened so long ago. Oh, no. I got gray hair for a reason. That's next right here, Chuck Oliver Show. Dan Matthews in for Chuck right here, wrapping it up on a Thursday.
To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
They're loyal to the school and what we do. They're not fans. They're really not fans. They're family. And there's a difference. 12th man's family. Fans come and go. Family sticks with you no matter what goes on, the good times, the bad times, anything else that happens. And that's what the 12th man's about, and that's what our fans are about. And that's what I love them, and I thank them for it. Thank them for their support. Really do.
See, usually when people are not the happiest with you, it's probably best to go on the charm offensive. I mean, Jimbo understands that. Brian Harsin, I mean, you know, I get it. It's frustrating answering the same questions, or at least what you think are the same questions. But, I mean, you just heard me talk with Jake Crane. I mean, it can't just be Jake Crane that feels like he's the only one that feels like that Brian Harsin doesn't necessarily know what he's doing. So, you know, it kind of seems like there is a good portion of that fan base that feels that way. And with Jimbo, too, as well. He understands what he needs right now. He needs the benefit of the doubt. And I don't know if I've ever necessarily talked with you guys about this, but I remember years ago, somebody who I really relied upon when I first got in this business, he told me that you have to have the benefit of the doubt. And he was talking about a coach, and he was saying this was at the time when there were questions of, will the Texans move on from Gary Kubiak or will they keep him as their head coach? And he talked about it's important that Gary has the benefit of the doubt because he's got the columnists in that city. He's got people writing columns saying, no, hey, don't move on. You know, the benefit of the doubt in serious fashion, college football wise, Mark Richt had the benefit of the doubt. I mean, because I would probably say after the 2010 season, that was when Georgia fans were kind of like, is this necessarily going the way we want it to go? And in 2011, the way it started did not help him. But then he finishes the season off 10-2. He goes to the SEC championship game. And still, you probably had a lot of people out there that were, you know, yeah, not necessarily sure. 2012, a few plays away, maybe would have had a chance to make the college football playoff that year, but, you know, ended up not being the case. And then you finish up in 2015 with him being shown the door. So, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of times that's what definitely does help is if a coach is somebody that you have members in the media, you have people at least, you know, for Mark Richt, the big thing was the big money donors there at Georgia for the longest times were the ones saying, no, like that's the guy I want representing my program. Give him time, give him a chance, give him what he needs, and let's try to win this thing. And then after that didn't happen, Kirby Smart came in and said, all right, here's what we need in order to compete, and this is what I'm going to need from all of you, support, that being president, AD, everybody of the such. Speaking of Brian Harsin, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Alabama, that's a huge Freudian slip there, the Auburn leadership structure in the athletic department. I mean, of course, Alan Green leaving the program as AD, and they're going to have to find a new one here pretty soon. But we'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow. Probably going to get into the A&M side of the Arkansas A&M game coming up this weekend and a few other games to be talked about tomorrow here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Again, like I said, tomorrow going to be the final day that I will be hosting and, of course, the final day of the week. So Monday, you get Chuck back from his brief hiatus as there is a buddy of ours on the local side on 6A The Fan, Matt Chernoff, of course, Chuck and Chernoff in Atlanta, that whenever Chuck is out, he says Chuck is on assignment. No, it's funny. Yesterday, he said Chuck is actually on assignment. He's doing the college football playoff thing in Dallas. So we'll have to pick his brain about that next week when he comes back. Are we aware that 15 years ago today that a major event in college football happened? And it was something in college football when it comes to a coach addressing the media that continues to this day to be a staple and something that people will either yell out in terms of, oh yeah, hey, remember how funny that was? Or also to remembering this exact interaction with the media. And of course, I think you know who I'm talking about. That is current Oklahoma State coach Mike Gundy, much younger then, but still getting after a media member.
Here's all that kid did. He goes to class. He's respectful to the media. He's respectful to the public, and he's a good kid, and he's not a professional athlete, and he doesn't deserve to be kicked when he's down. That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage, and the editor that let it come out is garbage. Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. Write something about me or our coaches. That's all I got to say. Makes me want to puke.
No, oh, and then I also that's the part at the end that I love is the applause at the end, because if you've ever been in a post-game press conference, sometimes you will have non-media members in there. I mean, you know, I've done numerous interviews at schools where, you know, somebody's talking to somebody, you know, that I'm trying to get to in terms of player or coach or somebody like that. And it's, oh, hey, who's that? Oh, it's a buddy of mine. You know, I mean, just somebody within the program. So it's sometimes a little different at certain schools. Some schools keep it buttoned up and say, nope, media, players, coaches only. That's all that's allowed in there. But obviously there were, you know, some people that were huge supporters of Mike Gundy. But of course, you know, I mean, that's one of the most iconic ones of all time is come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I remember, too, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was trademarked because a buddy of mine who did a late night Sunday sports show that, you know, a lot of local markets will have a 30-minute after the local news on Sunday sports show. and he would get coaches, players, famous figures to do a "Hi, I'm so-and-so," and Sports Sunday comes your way next. And he asked Mike Gundy if he could do it, and Gundy said, "I can't, actually." He goes, "Well, can you give us, you know, get your facts straight?" He said, "Yeah, I can give you that." And it was, "Hi, I'm Mike Gundy. Sports Sunday is next. Get your facts straight," you know. And it was great. He was a good sport about it. But now, remember it? Way back when, 15 years ago, Robbie Reed was the quarterback. I remember that. And, yeah, that was an interesting interaction between coach and media. David Holloway, you're the man, buddy. Thank you, as always. Want to thank Nebraska interim coach Mickey Joseph. Want to thank Tim Hall from The Buckeye Show on 97.1 The Fan in Columbus. Andrew Spivey of Gator Country. Jake Crane, Crane and Company. Back at it tomorrow right here. It's Dan Matthews in for Chuck. This is The Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.